All right, good morning, everyone. Welcome to the meeting today. It's our study committee on the review of tax incremental financing. First order on the agenda is to take roll. Would you please call roll?
Senator Gooda.
Here.
Representative Ladenbeck.
Here.
Senator Jack is excused. Representative Kuglich.
Here.
Representative Anstead.
Yes.
Representative Zepnik. Public members Andrews. Michael Harrigan.
Here.
Eileen Kelly. John Kovari. Richard Lincoln is excused. David Rasmussen.
Here.
Brian Rico is excused. Jason Cirque is excused. Mike Slavish. Peter Thelman.
Here.
Tom Wilson is excused, and Hal Wortman.
All right, well, thank you very much for being here today on this cold, snowy morning. Next item on the agenda is approval of minutes from the October 9th meeting. Do we have a motion? Motion to approve, second? We got a second, Representative. All in favor, vote aye. Aye. Any opposed? All right, minutes pass. We've had some discussion here this morning. We had some discussion yesterday, and as Chair, I've come to the conclusion that I think what I want to try and accomplish today, and I want to kind of be kind of open-ended with this a little bit and allow some latitude to not only yourselves but to our Ledge Council folks here. I would like this to try and be our last meeting where we formally have to meet. So this would kind of be like our wrap-up meeting. But there's going to be some things that are going to take place today that are going to depend on whether that happens or not. What we're going to try and do this morning is we're going to go over each of the bills that we have for pending. And we're going to briefly have Ledge Council explain those bills as they sit today. And then what I'd like to do after we have an understanding of what each of the bills are, kind of a refresher, we would then have a ranking sheet. And this was brought up by Representative Kuglich last time, and I agree with him. We've got like 17 pending pieces of legislation here. I can assure you that there is no way we're going to get through 17 pieces of legislation in this next session. We'd like to narrow the scope of what we want to try and accomplish here in the state legislature to maybe 8 to 10. So knowing that, what we'd like to do is have each of you then rank based on where you sit with each of those legislations. What's the most important for you and your personal preference? And we'll go down through the ranking. And then what we'll do is we'll take a short break. We'll have Ledge Council kind of roll those numbers up, and we'll have that list of 10 or 8. And then what we will do is we'll kind of focus the rest of our day on those pieces of legislation, knowing that we're not going to get to the other ones. We will probably keep those pieces of legislation as ideas for the future, but we just won't get at them this session. I'm just being realistic here. Once we get to those 10 pieces, we'll have a little more in-depth conversation about those 10 pieces. If there is any concerns, any questions, any amendments that need to be taken into consideration. And then towards the end of the day here, what we will do is we'll kind of have a wrap-up. And at that time, I'll have Ledge Council explain how they'd like the voting procedure to go. And then what we will do ultimately then is in December, early December, we would send out a mailer for the formal mailing ballot that we would say, yes, these are the pieces of legislation that we want to move on to the committee and have them review and allow us to move forward on. So it's kind of a simplistic process, but it could take us a while to get through some of the questions and concerns you may have with the bills, and that's certainly understandable. So I guess what I'd like to do at this time, and one thing I want you to realize as we go through these bill briefs, it's not going to be so much the very technical nature of having the bill. Understand that these are just drafts, and drafts will move, words will change, things will be added, things will be deleted as we move through the process after we conclude our format here. So I don't want you to get wrapped up in whether it says may or shall or any of that stuff, because right now at this point it really doesn't matter too much. I think conceptually is what we're looking at. Do the concepts of these bills make sense to move forward? And you're going to have to trust that the committees and the legislators are going to take that and run. And I would certainly encourage at that time when we get to the committees with some of these bills that there would be folks here that were on this committee that would take time to maybe come and testify in favor or whatever your flavor may be with those bills. So, you know, although today may be the last day that we meet formally, we may end up seeing some of you in the future as we move forward through the late summer months, so, or the late winter months, excuse me. So having said that, if everybody kind of agrees with that format, I think what I'd like to do then is have Ledge Council kind of go through these bills and give us a brief overview. If you have some quick questions, that would be great. But once we get our tally tallied up, we would go into those 10 or 8 a little more in depth, and at that time we could have a little deeper discussion. So I turn it over to Ledge Council. Any questions? Representative?
On a few of these that are really pretty just technical, like extending the time period for review and then about the first class mailing, is it possible we could bundle those just for ease of...
Sure. Typically what we do is after the committee has taken a vote on what bills they would like to move forward on recommending to the Joint Rich Council, we'll have a discussion and figure out with you guys how you would like to package them. Scott and I have some ideas on how we would suggest that, but that would we'll save that discussion, I think, for the end. Typically, it's easiest to keep track of, you know, two or three as compared to, you know, seven or eight.
Yeah, you're absolutely correct, Representative. Thank you for bringing that up. There will be an opportunity to, you know, take some of the bills that we consider just cleanup bills, some language changes that are kind of minor, package them together and create one bill out of that. So that would be a great thing. Did you have a question, Mr. Hurry?
Well, just on your suggested format, Mr. Chairman, it just seems like if there are some of these that are really pretty clearly technical and not policy, by bundling them, we could accomplish a great deal without getting things bogged down. And if we're prioritizing these separately and individually, I'm sure that a lot of those will fall out as as a low priority, and it would be a shame not to clean those things up with a single cleanup.
I think that would be part of the discussion towards the end. If you're saying that something ranked 15, but it would just be a cleanup bill that could be packaged with number 8, I agree with you. We could make that recommendation and have that done as well. So I think what we're kind of looking for is to sort out the heavy hitters as to, you know, which ones can have the greatest impact on changing legislation and the greatest impact for things that you deal with on a daily basis. So it's a good suggestion. Thank you. And I did want to say one thing. I was under the weather last time we met, and I had to leave early, so I want to thank the Vice Chair, Representative Loudenbeck, for taking over, so I appreciate that. Thank you. Feeling better today, though. So. All right. Thank you. Having said that, I'm going to turn it over to Ledge Council. Representative.
I was going to ask if you all wanted to do that right off the bat as well, like that there were items. I mean, I think there's one that I guess I would put out as very clearly technical as the one relating to repealing various provisions. That's WLC 40-P1. It's on the back side of the agenda. Beyond that, I guess. If others wanted to be considered technical in nature, I would prefer to do that at your direction.
Okay. So as we go through these, if someone deems one of these a piece of legislation could be deemed technical, let's bring that up right away as we go through. Sure. Whatever you want to do, that's fine.
I think, as Senator Goodix points out, you know, once we've identified perhaps 10 pieces, I think it is common to package those up into maybe two or three or four bill drafts, and one of those could be a technical package. So deciding among the 10 that are selected which ones go into that technical category would be a common thing to do.
And just a reminder for everybody, we are going to be on Wisconsin Eye today, so if you want to speak, just please press your speak button. Thank you.
Before we get started, I want to just point out two things. First of all, you'll notice that the agenda was slightly modified to adjourn at 4 o'clock instead of 3 o'clock. That was to give us a little bit more latitude, given the fact that we have a lot of bill drafts before us. That doesn't mean that we'll talk and continue discussions until 4, but I just want you to be alerted to that. Another thing about the agenda, what Scott and I did was we did not place these completely in numerical order. Some of them were grouped according to the topic, like the donor TID related drafts are kind of lumped together. But the way that our office numbers the drafts, it kind of is first come, first serve. And some of us also have other, there are other committees that are drafting, so some of these might not necessarily follow suit, you know, the TID drafts, I think, are kind of numbered a little differently. So just pay attention. I think Scott and I will try and alert you to the numbers so that you'll be able to pull them out of your packet at the appropriate time. The first bill draft is the WLC 18/P2, and this was a bill draft that we started to talk about at the last meeting, but we only got about 3 or 4 minutes into the discussion. And you'll notice that the number has a /P2, which indicates to you guys that this is a preliminary draft, but it's a second version of a preliminary draft. So that means when you see this, that'll tell you this is different than what you saw last time. The difference being in this bill draft is that at the direction of the chair and Senator Jock's request, they wanted to have a little bit more clarity as to some items that should be in an annual report. So that is the key difference in this bill draft. Those items are found at the very bottom of page 5 and go all the way through page 6. So this bill draft, just to give you a brief overview of this one is based on Illinois law, which requires joint review boards to meet annually to review what they call, you know, financial analyses of TIDs. And municipalities are required to submit reports of these fiscal, I think actually they do audits every year, of their TIDs. And the reports are submitted to their state comptroller and are posted in PDF form on the state comptroller's website. And then the reports are also submitted to all of the overlying taxing jurisdictions. And then the overlying taxing jurisdictions meet to review these reports. So this bill draft is really patterned after Illinois law, trying to plunk it a little bit into what our law does regarding the annual reports. Right now, they're required to be submitted on May 1st. So what I did in this bill draft is I required every municipality to create at least one standing joint review board. If there are more than one overlying taxing jurisdiction that's different, like say for example a municipality has two school districts, well, you know, then and there's a TID created in each of those school districts, then of course you're going to need to have two standing joint review boards so that body can review the TIDs in their appropriate jurisdictions. They're required to meet annually on or after May 1st. They're supposed to be reviewing the annual report. Municipalities are supposed to be submitting the reports to DOR for DOR to upload onto their website. And then the content that I highlighted earlier that's supposed to be in the annual report listed on bottom of page 5 and 6, that's just kind of a minimum threshold of what needs to be in there. It's not an exhaustive list. And there are provisions in here that if a municipality needs an extension of time, they can request one from DOR. But if they miss the extension of time or they don't request it, and after DOR has reminded them that they need to submit these reports, within a certain period of time, if they do not submit the reports to DOR and the overlying taxing jurisdictions, then there's a mechanism for a fine, a penalty, and DOR is required to conduct an audit.
Representative?
Just that last part about DOR is required to conduct an audit. Can you, every year?
It's designed, I think, to really be, well, Illinois requires this audit procedure as a mechanism, as essentially a penalty, as a shtick for getting your stuff in. So if you don't get your stuff in, then you're going to be audited. But if you do get your reports in on time and you follow the letter of the law, then you don't need to worry about an audit.
That's
by DOR.
I understand.
On this mechanism.
Just making sure that wasn't, that's connected to the if you're late. Thank you.
Any questions? Representative?
Mr. Chair, I just have a question. It just seems like we're adding a level of bureaucracy
possibly, what is the gain for this, or what is the main reason that we're adding this level?
My understanding when I received the request from the chair was that some municipalities don't necessarily submit, they just check boxes that they have submitted their annual reports to the overlying taxing jurisdictions. And my understanding was part of this was to try and make sure that municipalities are following through.
Okay.
And that there is a JRB review of these so that this is essentially one attempt also to strengthen the JRB review process.
Okay. Thank you.
Mr. Berman?
Yeah, I think this is very well written. There was concern earlier that this should increase transparency and that perhaps some municipalities weren't doing what they were supposed to do. I think this really helps put it all in one website where anybody can go look at any TIF district, and I think that increase in transparency is a good thing. With regard to the audit, does the Department of Revenue have adequate staff to do that? I mean, could they contract that out and perhaps charge that cost back to the municipality?
I could amend the bill to do that.
Good suggestion. Go ahead.
My one comment would be on the joint review boards for those that have multiple underlying jurisdictions. If there'd be some way that you can make it just one meeting where they all can be present to review the audit findings instead of having to set up separate standing joint review boards for multiple meetings. I wonder if that is a possibility.
Mr.
Chair?
Yep.
I have a little issue with this, especially in the Northwoods, where, you know, the Joint Review Board members are usually elected officials, either the county board, the school board, the municipality itself, and those change, you know, almost annually. By having the standing Joint Review Board, you know, there's going to be turnover in that Joint Review Board, and I guess I'm thinking it adds another level of bureaucracy to the whole thing. You know, I'm all for the transparency thing, but I think it's going to be hard to keep a standing joint review board for, you know, 20 years or so, as you know, long as some of these TIFs last.
I think, and I'm just going to preface this a little bit. If you guys remember the conversation we had when we first talked about this, there was a fairly large concern from the assembly side of the legislature on transparency with TIDs, okay? And there was even some talk about drastically redoing the whole structure of TIDs, which probably in some cases wouldn't be palatable to a lot of the municipalities that are sitting here today and utilize TIDs. So this, to me, was a peace offering to say that, look, we want to have some transparency in having and creating TIDs and allowing municipalities to do this. In the giveaway for this was that we would mandate that there be a joint review process once a year. Doesn't matter if it was the joint review board that set up the TID or not. As long as there was a group of representatives represented by those jurisdictions to be there to say, yes, we received the information and we have it should anybody ask. And I think that's what we're looking for, is that we want to make sure that there is that connectivity to the joint review process, that they have the information. And I know there were some communities that just checked boxes and moved on and they didn't really hand the stuff out. That's not what's supposed to happen. And I think what we're doing is we're just putting a little bit of teeth into this process and making sure that we are accountable to the people that actually are in the taxing jurisdictions. And you know, how that makeup looks and how that board changes is going to be subject to the people that do the voting. I get that. But nonetheless, they will be representing their jurisdiction, whether they were there 5 years ago or whether they were there 6 months ago. So I'm just saying that I think that this is just a way of making sure that we have some accountability, that people understand that there are people that do have this information and we can go to these people should we have a question. Mr. Hergen?
I think that in order to strengthen the credibility of the tax increment program across the state, you really need to do what you can to improve that transparency issue. And you really need to make sure that the communities that are taking advantage of the program are providing at least a minimum level of information to these JRB people so that they have some level of comfort that the taxes that they are not being able to tap into for a period of time are being handled the way that they thought they were going to be handled in accordance with the project plan. So, I mean, I recognize that it's going to be more work for the communities, particularly the ones that aren't going this far right now. Many of them are, actually.
Correct.
But I think it's probably a good thing. And the only thing I would mention is that there are a couple of particulars in here, and I know you don't want to get into the
we can do that after we do the hands and others.
But there's a couple of things in here having to do with the date by which these reports get filed, some of the language about what the JRB is actually going to be looking at, like whether it's effective, a district is effective. I think that's a very subjective question. I'd rather have the word kind of be performance. We'll get into all that stuff right now, but I'm just sure. saying that there's some stuff like that that really should be cleaned up if this is going to be moved forward.
Okay, thank you. All right, we'll move on to the next bill.
Next one on the agenda is 35/P1 relating to industrial zoning requirements in a taxing or mineral district. And just as Melissa mentioned, we have the order out of order here a little bit. We're going to go through following the agenda. Everything is in the packet that you received in numerical order. So looking at 35 right now. And it's a short draft. Relates to the current law requirement that that when property is in a TID, that if it's zoned for industrial use, must remain zoned for industrial use for the life of the district. The instructions we received at the last meeting were to limit that to industrial districts rather than the different types of TIDs such as blighted or mixed use and so on. And what this draft does is limit that zoning requirement for industrial zoning to industrial districts.
Any questions on that? Okay, great. We'll move on to the next one.
Would this be technical or is this substantive?
This is the type of thing that I would consider to be substantive.
Okay.
36.
I would consider that more technical.
What's that?
I would consider it more technical and a cleanup in the bill. Yeah, I don't know how many more industrial TIF districts are actually being created right now anyway. So that'd just be my opinion on this one.
Okay. Thank you. All right.
The next one on the agenda is next in the packet, 36-P1. This relates to notice requirements for the amendment process. Under current law, the notice requirements for amendments match up with the notice requirements for creation. And instructions received at the last meeting directed us to essentially lower one of the thresholds for the notice requirement. This is moving from a Class 2 notice to a Class 1 notice for the notice published by the Planning Commission in order to deal with amendments rather than creation.
You want to understand that one? Sure. Technical.
I agree.
And this is what I appreciate. We'll note these. I think Melissa and I would rather hear it, you know, from you guys if you're considering these to be technical, that we categorize them accordingly based on your preferences. So we will note that. The next one is
Mr. Chairman.
Go ahead.
Just a note on that one too is the Joint Review Board, their first meeting is to choose a chairperson and a citizen member, and you know, that's a 2-minute meeting typically. I'm wondering about if you would want to, you know, exclude, you know, the requirement of having that notice in the paper for the first Joint Review Board. I can see it for the second one, obviously. And maybe that is when the citizen member and the chairman could be selected at that point.
Does that happen at all joint review board meetings, that the first meeting is always selecting the chairperson and the citizen at large?
If you don't have a, if there is no joint review board in existence, then the first order of business is the election of the chair and the selection of the citizen.
There's no other business?
Well, typically, the business would also include an explanation of the duties and responsibilities of the joint review board for an orientation, and then at least all the ones that we have an opportunity at that point to brief the joint review board on what the project plan is all about, so that they aren't hearing it for the first time when they have to take action. This is an opportunity to brief them.
So you don't feel that that would need the same notification as a regular meeting?
Yeah, I'm just, you know, it's just the notification type of, you know, we still have this first meeting, but notifying it in the paper, I think, is just an
okay.
extra step.
We can consider those and move forward. Thank you.
The next bill draft is WLC 0037/P1. It's related to industry-specific town TIDs. There was discussion at the last meeting concerned that certain members that live outside of the municipality, the town, for example, can request DOR to conduct a review of these industry-specific town TIDs, and that that type of a review process is not included in the regular TID provisions of 66.1105. And so this bill draft basically repeals that whole portion of the industry-specific town TID law that require or that allows a number of people actually to request DOR to conduct a review of those industry-specific town TIDs.
Questions? Go ahead.
First draft that we consider today, WLC 0018P2, apply then in this case?
That was something that was going to be one of my questions when we talked about 18/2, was if you wanted it to apply to town TID law as well. The first cut, it was a lot of drafting as it was, so I did not try and cross-reference it to all the other chapters, but my assumption is that you guys, to at least ask you guys, because I think it would be appropriate.
We'll talk about that at that time.
What was the question again, Peter? I wasn't tracking it.
The first bill draft we considered on the reporting requirements?
Yes.
Does not apply to this bill.
Okay, well, I'm sure.
You know, I guess I should also clarify, too, that a lot of these bill drafts took a lot of time to work on. So if there were, you know, cross-references that we needed to add, Scott and I, our concern was trying to make sure you guys got the meat of the bill drafts and that we can always add them to the other, you know, cross-reference sections like, you know, in Chapter 60 with the town TID laws.
Representative?
Thank you. under current law, towns are, though, required, they already do an annual report and submit it to DOR. But you would want it. I'm in favor of having the same, you know, the same. Part of this was to not have certain things apply only to certain, you know, so uniformity would be fine and I think appropriate.
Ms. Herter?
And I think this change makes a lot of sense because if I understand legislation that's existing here, it provides the opportunity for the DOR to come back after the town has already created a district and after it's actually potentially borrowed funds and do a critique and make some determinations as to whether they did the right thing. If there's any potential that things could be unwound as a result of a finding by the DOR, nobody's going to want to make a commitment on funding of any project. So it really would stymie the opportunity to do anything here for a town. So I would agree with this change in this case. And the other thing, the reality is that there are so few, I don't know how many of these there are, but there are, you can probably count them on one hand, the number of occasions where this has actually been invoked, this industry-specific town TIF legislation, very, very limited.
Okay. Thank you.
The next bill draft on our agenda is WLC 0038/P1, and this is one of the
the donor-tid, there were actually, there are three bills. The next three are all donor-tid-related drafts. This one repeals the limitations on what TIDs may receive tax increment donations. It's a very, you know, short bill. It's just repealing stuff. The second one, let's just talk about the three together. That way you guys can all, you know, have a discussion about donor TID stuff together. The next one is WLC 0039/P1, and this one is in response to concerns about how some TIDs may not be able to donate to another municipality simply because there are certain special purpose districts, like a sanitary, a lake sanitary district, a public inland lake protection and rehabilitation district, or a town sanitary district. Those might be different depending on whether or not one TID might be able to donate. Let me rephrase this. This bill basically removes the limitations regarding the special purpose districts so that a TID could donate to another TID even if the special purpose districts might be different. This is based on a bill draft that was introduced, I think it was Assembly Bill 4. It was introduced, but it didn't really go anywhere this past legislative session. So I will point out a couple of things about this particular draft because I'm not 100% sure if it does everything you want it to do. This particular draft, it basically allows any TID that has currently been created to share, to donate or receive tax increments regardless of whether or not the special purpose districts are the same. And then going forward, any TID that is created in the future, this bill draft says that those special purpose districts just cannot participate. So essentially it'll remove the, or decrease probably slightly, I don't know how much, but it essentially will decrease the tax increments that a municipality could potentially donate to another municipality. So there was concern that we talked about at the last meeting about the public purpose doctrine. And technically, this might violate the public purpose doctrine, but as it relates to current TIDs that are currently in existence. But when I talked to LRB, our thought is that whatever concern there would be, it would be a de minimis concern. We're not talking about large tax increment donations, probably, as we're talking, because we're talking about special purpose districts. And so the theory is that if a court were to have a concern about this, they might still find this particular draft to be fine because the problem is a small, minimal, de minimis kind of a problem. Because it's just a redraft, I included it so that you guys could think about it and see how you wanted to proceed. Because the next bill draft, WLC 42/P1, is a little bit trickier, and I'm not really sure that it gets you to what you want. It's very, in my opinion, it's very preliminary. It gives you just some ideas to think about, because I'm not quite sure I'm accomplishing what you want. But regarding the ability for a TID to either donate or receive, regardless of where they are located in the municipality, this bill draft tries to eliminate the barriers for a TID to be a donor or a recipient, regardless of the overlying taxing jurisdictions, if certain criteria are met. And I've included bullet points on page 2 under the discussion about the bill draft, that the following conditions must apply: that the geographical boundaries of both the donor and recipient TIDs lie completely within the geographical boundaries of the same city. The tax increments allocated to the recipient TID must exclude all tax increments that can be attributed to general property taxes levied by an overlying taxing jurisdiction that is not the same in the recipient TID. And then that the tax increments not allocated to the recipient are returned to the overlying taxing districts that levied those general taxes. And I'm not sure if this is, I don't know how a municipality would calculate this or how, I don't know if it's workable, but essentially I'm trying to make sure that, for example, if the school districts are different, the TID A can still donate to TID B as long as the school district receives whatever tax increments, you know, they levied. So that, I don't know, let's say 5,000 of the tax increments are going to be donated that are based on what the school district levied, those $5,000 would be returned back to the school district instead of being shared with the other TID. Or it could be remained. I didn't draft it that way, but that's an option. So this is, you know, again, this is really a rough cut. I really don't know what you guys think about it, if it's workable. But it's a first attempt.
Any questions?
Wasn't this a... we had Bill Milkey from Rookert Milkey firm here before this committee, and he made a presentation, I thought, on this subject. Wasn't this his issue? And how... I was looking for the particulars of his testimony in here, but I think... If I understood his points correctly, the first bill, WLC 3039, mm-hmm. I think, mm-hmm. addresses that, I think.
Yeah, from what I remember, I have it somewhere and I can look for it again. He was the one that proposed the second draft I talked about, the redraft of AB 4, which excluded special purpose districts.
So this accomplishes that.
The third bill draft, the 42P1, it goes further. That is to try and allow any TID to donate or receive, regardless of where they are located.
Right. I guess as an example that might be relevant to some folks in the room, the first draft, the 39 draft, deals only with the small increments and leaving those out. The second draft, 42, would apply in situations like. Fitchburg, south of Madison, doesn't have its own school district. Its school district is split between Oregon, Madison, and Verona. And the 42 draft would address the situation of sharing between those larger districts. And Melissa discussed the potential limitations on doing that. It's a departure from current law, a pretty significant departure, whereas 39 is the same idea, but for the de minimis districts, such as the smaller special purpose districts.
I remember the conversation when we had the presentation, and at that time, the only concern was the sanitary districts, the lake associations, the sanitary districts. I know it morphed into more than that, but it's kind of in a gray area for me at this point. I mean, I think that we would have a lot of discussion should this get to a committee level. Mm-hmm. Because we're really taking a step away from what the intent of TIDs are really about. But you know, I'm willing to hear some more concerns or questions on this. Ms. Tillman?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. On the small districts, the de minimis districts, we're completely writing them out and for future created TIF districts. Can you retroactively write them out on what would the impact be on the districts that are currently in existence if they're no longer able to participate in existing districts?
I think what I did was I tried to amend the definition of a tax increment. So if you're looking at WLC 39/P1, bottom of page 2, section 1, basically redefines what a tax increment was. And I could potentially, if you want to try and address TIDs that currently exist, I could amend this so that those TIDs couldn't receive tax increments from a different sanitary district, for example.
My recommendation is maybe we define who can participate in a TIF district and leave it to the big four, the school, the municipality, the county, and the technical college as the only participants in a TID going forward. That way, if another special district is created, you don't have to worry about that entering into the equation. Legislation.
Well, then you, Mr. Chairman?
Yes, go ahead.
Then you've got, I think, at least in Milwaukee County, an issue. There's a fairly significant amount of contribution occurring right now with Metropolitan Milwaukee Sewer District in these districts that are part of that district's territory, and that would have quite a dent on tax increment cash flows if we were to eliminate that.
Except in a Class 1 city. I don't know.
We've discussed 42. So are 38 and 39 together or mutually exclusive? Like, do we only need, if we have 39, do we not need 38?
I think if you like 38, 38 should be plunked into both 39 and 42. Because 38 is basically saying that any TID can receive tax increments. And right now, that's not true.
Okay, so if we don't like 42, 38, and 39...
You can still do. Together. Yes.
Okay. But 39 does not incorporate what's in 38.
Correct.
Thank you.
Yeah, I mean, I'm just speaking off the cuff here. I'm not too comfortable with 42 at this point, but somebody may change my mind.
I think 42 will require a lot more diligence.
I agree. We'll wait and see how the ranking goes.
Okay, so moving along, 40 is one draft that I already mentioned as the one that's technical in nature that after working with DOR identified just a handful of provisions actually that relate to single subject TIDs that have already terminated, that sort of thing, and so it repeals the language relating to those items.
So it's technical?
That, I believe, that's the one that I would be comfortable calling technical.
Okay.
41 relates to inclusion of vacant land in the TID boundaries. And current law has a restriction that property standing vacant for 7 years immediately preceding the adoption of a resolution creating a TID may not comprise more than 25% of the area. There's some exceptions to that restriction relating to City of Milwaukee and property contaminated by environmental pollution. I'm sorry, Milwaukee County rather than the city. And also there's a restriction. It's exempt from property in industrial or mixed-use TIDs already. And so what the draft does is removes the restriction outright for all TIDs created after the bill takes effect.
Questions? Representative?
Can someone remind me the backstory on this one? If just for a minute.
I don't have the backstory. Somebody got the backstory.
Part of the problem that had been identified earlier, and this goes to some extent to, I think, correspondence that the committee had received from the city, as well as follow-up correspondence from us, from me, on this question. We have experienced issues with the vacant land test, particularly in cases where you've got an urban site. One good example of this is a parking lot situation where there's it's a part of an urbanized area, clearly demands and should lend itself to a higher and better use for redevelopment, but is a parking lot vacant or not? And that's been a gray area. We think that this needs to clean that up. There's also the question of the way in which that language has been interpreted, and I think one of the things that was pointed out in the Milwaukee correspondence was that you've got valuation concerns here that have to do with the building and the value of the building as relates to the value of the land, and if you can establish the proper ratio, then you don't have to declare it as vacant. So there's been a problem with the way that the law has been interpreted a little bit in the past, but literal readings of it would tend to indicate that it could work. Now, this would clean that up. There was one other point, though, that has come up and somewhat related to this, and that I don't think it got addressed directly, but I think it's been discussed, and that is the situation where you've got a value that is required to be placed upon a piece of property when it's owned by the municipality as a part of the base value, and that tends to create a problem in terms of distorting the base and taking away the potential for increment. I know that's not a part of this particular piece, but maybe it should be in this particular instance. So I think I'd offer that. I know that there are others of us here that have brought that up and thought that would be a good idea to bring forward. So I'll offer that as another idea. But that's a little bit of the backstory on this. And I think the letters that are in there address this too.
If we rank this correctly, then, Mr. Harrigan, we would consider an amendment by you when we get to that point.
Yes.
Okay. Any other questions with this one? Okay, thank you.
The next bill draft is WLSD 0043/P1, and this, I believe, is in response to concerns raised by a number of you, but Ms. Andrews had suggested trying to help address situations where the statutes change and that negatively impacts a TID's performance, or, for example, when DOR changed its equalized valuation calculation methods that negatively impacted a lot of TIDs across the state. So what this bill draft does is it essentially allows an extension of the life of a TID if there is, if the statutes are amended or DOR changes its calculation of equalization valuations, and that negatively impacts the TID. It also allows the municipality to amend a TID's project plan at least, well, essentially any time the TID is impacted by a change in state law or policy.
So really what this bill does is holds the state body to account for making changes on a whim and the impact it has on locals. So I think that, to me, I guess it's a good thing. But
I don't know that this, I don't think this covers this, but another example of the thing that might be something to consider adding or including here is the situation where there is a change in state policy regarding funding of another taxing jurisdiction. Act 145 was passed just this past year for technical districts, colleges, where that's going to result in a drop in value, or excuse me, a drop in the levy, and they're prohibited from adding that back in on the levy limit side. So this is going to drop tax rates for TIF districts by almost 90 cents a thousand, every district in the state. That could create a problem for a number of districts, and that problem could be ameliorated by allowing them a little more time to recover from that.
Okay, duly noted. Any other questions on this one? Okay.
Number 44, WLC 44/P1. This relates to what was described as a timing penalty issue. And generally the way it arises is that based on certain statutory deadlines and deadlines with DOR, it's the situation that a TID district, the number of maximum positive increments that may be allotted during its lifetime will actually vary for a TID of equal lifespan depending on the date that TID is created. This draft is intended to add a year to the TID's lifespan in order to recoup that amount, and it identifies the period of time where this situation was arising with the one less TID increment allocation was, for, as far as we could tell, for TIDs created after September 30th and before May 15th in any given years.
Representative, go ahead.
Would this be technical?
Yes.
It's your committee.
Any other questions or concerns? I think this one was pretty clear-cut. I think we talked about this one, and there was a whole timing issue, and I think it was well explained at the time how it can negatively impact the start of a TID. So. Okay.
Okay. The next bill draft is WLC 0012/1. Now, this will, just so you guys pay attention, the slash one means that this is not a P draft at this point. It means that it's our, what we would think would be ready to be sent to LRB for drafting. This one is dealing with the maximum review period that a joint review board has to approve a municipality's resolution related to a TID. It extends it from 30 days to 45 days after receiving the resolution. There were no changes to this bill draft other than I think removing a comment that I had asked as a question.
I think this was a timing issue in getting the committee to meet. Correct?
Technical.
Technical. Great.
The next bill draft is WLC 0013/1. This is another draft we talked about at the last meeting related to the levy limit exception. And there were no real changes made to this bill draft based after our discussion last time. But just to refresh your memory, it increases the percentage that is used to determine the levy limit adjustment due to a TID's termination from 50% to 85%. It also specifies essentially when a municipality can realize this increase, and it essentially allows a municipality to determine within a period of 3 years when to realize that increase.
This was Brian's suggestion, mm-hmm. correct? If I remember that?
Mm-hmm.
I know we had some discussion on this.
Yeah.
And I know where this one's going.
Yeah. And I guess I should also, he's not here, but he did share with me, at your place, there is a chart of numbers. I think it's entitled TIF District Termination Levy Limit Adjustment Analysis. He had been in discussions with DOR. I think he talked with Nate Ristow, and I think maybe he might have also briefed Mr. Harrigan on this issue. But I think the DOR raised some concerns on how the levy limit is calculated related to TIDs. And if the committee liked this bill draft, I think Mr. Rico would suggest to have the bill amended so that it would require the levy limit calculation to be based on total TID equalization value less the TID values. I think right now when DOR calculates equalization values, they include TID values. And this handout was to illustrate to you what happens when the disparities that can happen when the equalization value is calculated and TIDs are included in that process. I don't know if Mr. Harrigan has anything further to add to that.
No, I think it's sort of a technical thing, actually, but I think, I don't know if everybody got a copy of this, but there's an email that came from Nate Ristow at the Department of Revenue. It's sort of a one-paragraph explanation of what you just said. And did this get out to everybody? Or?
No, I wasn't sure if I was supposed to submit that. I can send it to people. I can make photocopies, actually, right now, if you'd like.
Did we have someone read it?
Sure. Dear Brian, I wanted to get back to you on your question from Thursday about how DOR calculates the levy limit exceptions for terminated TIDs pursuant to Section 66.0602-3DM. The statute states that the exception equals 50% of, quote, the amount determined by dividing the value increment of the terminated TID calculated for the previous year by the political subdivision's equalized value for the previous year. Equalized value in the statutes equals the TID in value unless it states otherwise. In other parts of the statutes, equalized value is followed by, quote, excluding or being exclusive of TID values. So where that is not designated in the statutes, DOR interprets it to mean TID in equalized values. Therefore, adjusting our calculation of the levy limit exception for terminated TID increments would require a statutory change. I hope this helps. Let me know if you have additional questions.
So it's simply a matter of changing it to make it clear that it's supposed to be the entire TID value, not just the TID out value. And that makes a difference in terms of the impact of the application at either 50 or 85% factor. Pretty significant.
And to suggest that this could be done on a technical basis?
Well,
if you leave it 50, correct? If I'm not mistaken, if you leave the 50% as current law is, this would be a technical change.
Yes, yeah. If you're leaving it at 50% and not bundling these things, this by itself is a technical thing.
Correct. But if you're looking to go from 50 to 85.
Yeah, that's not technical.
I would say.
I get that.
I guess, you know. I think we were going to stretch the terms of the meaning of the word technical.
I agree.
Here.
But we're suggesting, regardless, revenue is looking for this change.
Correct.
For a clarification of the law. That's what I'm gathering here, that this is a clarification for revenue's sake on the law.
I don't know if it's for revenue's sake, but I think it's clearly for the benefit of communities in terms of the application of this. It would be an appropriate change. I think the DOR has done the right thing, given the type of history of interpretations here, but I think the direction here would be better served for communities if that change were implemented.
I was going to say, as I understand that proposal, it would have the effect essentially of increasing the size of the levy exemption due to that return TID without changing the percentage.
That's right.
Go ahead.
Okay, if we could get copies of that for our packets. I think that would be good to have. And I do have I did get a Fiscal Bureau memo on just running that 50 to 85 hypothetical calculations for two municipalities in my district. Would committee members be interested in seeing that?
Yeah, sure.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Okay, any other questions on this one? Okay, we'll move on.
All right, next up is WLC 15/1. This is the draft that relates to redetermining the base value for blighted or rehabilitation tax districts and picks up some of the language from the existing decrement bill. Under the bill, what would happen is that a TID that is a blighted or rehabilitation tax district would be able to reset their base value based on a legislative body would be able to adopt multiple resolutions if the project plan's amended to authorize that. Also requires the project plan to be amended to authorize the redetermination. But what this would allow is the local legislative body to essentially engage in more expansive decrement redeterminations for certain types of TIDs. Originally, I think this was one of the things that created interest in this draft was the observation that oftentimes when early on in a TID, these type of TIDs, lifespan property is removed and lowers the value, and that's expected based on the project plan.
This is clear only for redevelopment?
Right, yes. It's for TIDs that are designated as blighted or in need of rehabilitation.
Correct.
Or conservation.
Go ahead.
I realize that we had talked about this a little bit at the last meeting, but this, so this draft essentially creates an alternate process to legislation that was just passed through the Assembly last session. So I know, I mean, with respect for the committee members and the authors of the bill, it's, I mean, from a ledge council standpoint, to actually, you know, revisit something that so recently was done, I don't know if this is really, if there's a sense of urgency on this right now.
I can speak to that.
Okay.
I was the author of the bill. And I can tell you that the intent of my original draft was severely undercut by a member of the Assembly, that the bill is rendered ineffective, to be honest with you. In my discussions with the community in my district that I did this for, they're basically telling me that the bill is unworkable. So I would say that the urgency in this is a little more raised because the last bill isn't working the way it was intended to. Good.
As a follow-up, because we talked about this a little bit right after you left the last time. We did talk about the sunset at the last meeting. Are you comfortable with, is that a different bill? Okay. Thank you.
Okay. Other questions? Okay. You got a question, Richard?
Yes. So as the past author, you would be comfortable with us readdressing
this? I would be, correct.
Okay.
Thank you for asking.
Next draft on the list is WLC 16/1. This draft also should be considered with 19/1. 19/1 is the only draft that you don't have in your packet today. It's a draft that we left relatively untouched from the last meeting. 16 and 19 relate to the limits on TID creation as measured by total TID value. That's how I described the what's currently referred to as the 12% rule. And if you recall, draft 16 would raise the limit to from 12% to 15%, and would authorize the creation of one additional district. At the last meeting, the committee's input resulted in revising the draft to specify that one additional TID may not exceed 5% of total TID value. So essentially it would be a 5% TID, and potentially communities could go to a 20% limit under that one additional TID requirement. The draft 19/P1 is only the 12% to 15% movement.
Let me just in this one here, I have particular interest, and I wasn't going to speak a lot today except on this bill. Does anyone else feel that there would be? And let me rephrase this: if we went to the 12 to 15 plus 1. Would we be doing ourselves a disservice? Would we be creating a situation where we would have communities purposely looking for loopholes to get to the plus one? As in retrospect, maybe the 12 to 15 is it seems like a cleaner bill, I guess. You know, I'm throwing it out there for discussion. I go either way on this, but I'm trying to look at this through a realistic, kind of a realistic piece of glass here. And I know that in the legislature there's going to be a lot of discussion as to going from 12 to 15, and then throw the plus one on top with a 5% this, and then, you know, what does that do? What does that create? I throw that out there, just in terms of trying to be realistic. So.
Mr. Chair, I agree that I believe that we can get a 12 to 15% passed, which I think would assist the majority of the communities out there, especially our friends to the south in Kenosha. But I do believe when we do the and one, that is going to open up a lot of, I think, questions, and I do believe that would not pass. And matter of fact, I would probably not support it. So I do take your recommendation, and I think we do the 12 to 15, and I think we may have a little battle getting that through, but I do believe that that would be a much better chance.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and I agree wholeheartedly with Representative Kuglich. I think that certainly from Kenosha's position, and I think also not just Kenosha, because I don't want to be too parochial here, but to, you know, to the other dozen or more communities that are in the same situation as Kenosha, anything that jeopardizes going from 12% to 15%, I think, is certainly not in the those communities' best interest, and I don't think it's in the state's best interest. So I certainly think that 12 to 15 is probably where we should head, and that the, well, in a case where somebody, a community, believes that they should go above that 15%, I think that they should go through the procedures that have been done in the past and come directly to the legislature to do so.
Not that we wanted to rain on anybody's parade, but again, we're just trying to be realistic and trying to view these, and you try and conceptually look at, boy, how could this go through the process? And I agree with Representative Kuglich that I think that the 12 to 15 would have a very good chance of passing. But if we start throwing the plus one at 5%, it seems like we're trying to game it, and I don't want to give the impression we're trying to game anything.
Right, it would be 19/P1.
Is the one that...
It's just 12 to 15%.
Right? Okay.
Yep.
So 16's got the plus one in it.
So 16 would essentially go away, so to say.
And then...
Yes, just a question. Does 16 go away or does 19 go away?
16, if you're not interested in the plus one, then that's 16. Although I think when we did the ranking sheet, just so you guys know, we kind of categorized them by subject matter a little bit, and so 16 and 19 are the same line item. I guess I would consider working out that distinction between the two part of the moving on process for this afternoon. But if you guys want to just strike 16 altogether from that list.
Why don't we just do this? Why don't we just take a quick vote here. Everyone who's in favor of striking 16, which is the 12 to 15 plus one, raise your hand, and if you're opposed, not. Okay, we're going to strike 16.
Okay, so that we'll just make that note on the ranking sheet then, that when you're ranking them, you're ranking 19/P1, which is the move from 12 to 15.
Okay, thank you.
And then the last draft, just to wrap up the summary here, is 17/1. What that would do is the sunset for the designation of TIDS as distressed or severely distressed. If you recall from the previous meeting, this started out as a P1 draft that was reviewed by the committee, and the committee decided to have it to draft it as a extension of the sunset, or I'm sorry, an extension of the designation rather than removing the sunset altogether and making the distressed and severely distressed a always ever-present option under the law. So the draft, as drafted right now, extends the sunset from 2015 to 2020.
Okay. Yes, go ahead, sorry.
This was the part that I was mentioning. We just thought that, again, leaving it too open-ended would possibly create some angst in the legislature.
Yep. I agree. Thank you. Okay. What we'll do, why don't we hand out the slips?
I think everyone has one at their place.
Does everybody have one? I don't
have
one.
They should be at the bottom of your...
on this form, you should know 42 as well.
Thank you. We need to
insert that.
So that Rep. Kuglich said that WLC 42 isn't on the. I'm sorry. It is. It's mixed in as well. Sorry. That's another one.
Why don't you go through this?
It's on the bottom of the first page.
We have this.
We'll see if this ranking.
It's on the ranking form. It's at the bottom again.
It's in with 38.
It's in with 38 because.
Is that passed out?
Yeah.
Can
we go through the technical bills just to kind of, well, let's denote which ones are technical that we could combine?
So
if you're voting for one, you're actually voting for a package.
Okay, right now, my notes indicate that the committee designated the following to be suitable for a technical package: 35, 36, 40, 44, and 12.
40, 44, and 12.
Keeping in mind that one of those drafts relating to there was mention of amending the language relating to one of those drafts.
41.
Okay. So I guess there was a question of whether that would be technical as well.
Which one?
41.
Couldn't you also be technical? Just extending the sunset date?
I think that would have to be a bill.
Pardon?
I think that would have to be a bill.
My notes I had 37.
So you're considering right, I guess my understanding of that discussion is we would consider combining 18 and 37. And I guess that's another way we could look at this is if the committee wants to consider the concept of 37 as a subpart of 18.
Any thoughts on that?
That was standardized reporting requirements.
Right. 18 is the reporting requirement draft.
So the 18 plus the towns.
Right.
Would be included in 18.
That's what you had said, right?
That's right.
You thought they should be the same?
Yeah.
I think so, too.
But I guess, yeah, it could be one bill.
So 18 and 37 would be considered one bill?
Okay.
So is that what we understood? Okay, so I'm going to do my little coding here.
Right, it's the reporting, and 37 deals with reporting requirements in industrial town too. Right?
I'm sorry, I was trying to find a couple of tally sheets. I didn't quite catch. What is a lot of these can be combined, but they're very distinct. 18, in my opinion, is one of the most distinct policy options before the committee. So I guess I'm wondering what the thought was for combining them.
Because I think the committee is requesting that we include all the town TIDs in that new reporting, transparent reporting process, and then repeal other ones. So
they would have to report just the same as anybody else.
So then the repeal would be, could fit there, maybe not.
My guess in the drafting, you may just have to repeat the same language in both sections is what I think it comes down to.
Does that make sense to everybody? Are you okay with it?
That's the committee's decision.
Okay. All right.
If you guys want to do it.
Okay. So we'll consider 18 and 37 as one bill. Wasn't there something with 42? What did we discuss with 42? Just so I'm clear.
I think we're going
to round that.
Yeah.
Thought we're going to what?
I thought we'd do a 38, 39, 42.
We're dropping.
That's what I thought, too.
42.
38, 39, and drop 42.
And then 38, 39 would be technical.
Where's 42 at?
Probably not.
No.
I don't believe they'd be technical.
No. It's very
crazy. Okay.
Are we linking the technical ones to or just...
I think if...
So that's a question. I think we're kind of working through that. I apologize for the, you know, the process here that we're kind of thinking on our feet about how to rank these now that we've identified a handful as technical. One option would be to pull out all of the
technical
ones. And just
let's do this. Would everybody be in agreement that we should
we should all do the technical ones?
Just put a T.
Just put a T in the box like Representative Ludenbach is suggesting? That we would take that up as one bill and everybody would want that to move forward? Would that be something you'd want to do, show of hands?
Right.
Okay, so we would do a technical bill then, and that would be excluded from the ranking then.
Can we go back over those?
Let me just run through this ranking sheet a little bit. So we have technical being assigned to 35, 36, 40, 44, and 12.
So we have one.
Well, the issue with 41 is that Mr. Harrigan brought up the possibility of amending that to deal with the city value issue, right. And that would be a significant change.
We don't want to hurt you.
that would require repealing certain statutes. I guess I would consider that to be fairly substantive in nature.
Correct.
So I guess my recommendation would be that if we want to discuss that possibility of an amendment under 41, that we leave that off the technical list.
Then the only other thing that I noted was that 18 and 37 were the same. We're going to include them to be one bill, which would be a standalone bill. And the same would be for 39 and 38, excluding 42. 38 and 39 would also be its own bill, standalone bill, and it would be combined. Minus the 42, because we all agreed that 42 would be a scratch.
Well, so yeah, let me just do this count here. So
one, two, three, four, five, six, seven, eight. We're only ranking eight bills.
So then, how many do you
so
want?
So what you count? We're counting.
Plus the technical. But yeah,
plus eight. The technical. Yep. So we're ranking eight bills.
From one through eight.
So we actually end up having nine bills total. Roll them all into one bill. No. No way. So that gives us nine bills. What do you think?
So,
sorry, I wasn't
able to speak. I know.
We're informal, by the way.